The guest for today's episode is Tiffany Tsao. Tiffany Tsao is a writer and a literary translator. She is the author of the novel The Majesties and the Odd Fits Fantasy Trilogy. She has translated 5 books from Indonesian into English. For her translation of Budi Dharma's People from Bloomington, she was awarded the 2023 Penn Translation Prize and the 2023 NSW Premier's Translation Prize. Her translation of Norman Erickson Pasaribu's Happy Stories Mostly was awarded the 2022 Republic of Consciousness Prize for Small Presses and longlisted for the 2022 International Booker Prize. Born in the United States and of Chinese Indonesian descent, her family returned to Southeast Asia when she was 3. She spent her formative years in Singapore and Indonesia before moving to the US to study at a university. She has a BA in English Literature from Wellesley College and a PhD in English Literature from UC Berkeley. She lives in Sydney, Australia. You can buy her work using the links in the show notes. You can follow her Shneem podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcast apps. Welcome to our podcast, Tiffany.
Thanks for having me.
What was your inspiration to get into translations?
So my inspiration was actually before I used to be an academic. So I got a PhD in English literature and was doing some teaching at the university in English literature, but also world literature. And that included Indonesian literature as well. And then I decided to change fields. And around that time, I was looking for various jobs in other industries, including editing, things like that. And at this time, my agent who represents my written work gave me the good news that they had found a publisher interested in my novel, but also asked me at the same time if I would be interested in translating some Indonesian writers, because that year, that upcoming year was the Frankfurt Book Fair, where Indonesia was the guest of honor. So that's how I got started.
At the time, you were living in Australia? Or?
I was already living in Australia.
And so any part of your life you lived in Indonesia?
6 years when I was young, growing up. So I grew up in Singapore and Indonesia. And my parents would always work in Indonesia. But for a time when we were very young, they would commute back and forth between Singapore and Indonesia. So, and my family is Chinese Indonesian.
Tell us about your reading. Who are your favorite authors or any favorite novels or short story compilations?
Oh, that's interesting. I feel like it often changes. I really like, it's another work of translation. It's called Human Acts. That's the English title. It's by Han Kang, who's a Korean writer, and it was translated by Deborah Smith. And I read that last year and I've just really been thinking a lot about it since. Yeah, so that's the first one that comes to mind. In terms of general favorites or constant favorites, I really like Kazuo Ishiguro. Mm-hmm. I like to tell people I liked him before he won the Nobel Prize. So, yeah. So, you know, I was always on the bandwagon. I don't think I have this writing style myself, but I'm very impressed with, I guess, the deceptive simplicity of his language. I feel like the language is very bare, but it can convey quite a lot. And when you look at what details he tells and what details he doesn't, he's always really good at still giving you, an idea of what's going on, an idea of the scene, but also very, like, much more importantly, I think the inner character of people. Like, he's not that concerned with the intricacies and the ornateness of physical life and physical details. Like, it really gets right to the heart of the matter. So I really admire that about his work, yeah.
See, the books that you like, the writers that you like, the themes that you like, does it anyway influence the way you translate or the books that you choose to translate?
I think I do like creepy things, like things with a little bit of a creepy bent. And maybe that is why I like, you know, Ishiguro. And I think that's why I was drawn to writers like Budi Dharma, writers like Norman Erickson Pasaribu. There is a hint of the speculative, of the unfamiliar, of the slightly eerie.
Right.
I appreciate that very much about works. So I think that's probably does influence my taste a little bit. Not that I always get to pick what I translate, but most of the time.
Now, you wrote a novel, The Majesties. Can you tell us about the novel?
Yes, so that novel, it's about a woman whose sister has killed all of the guests and her family at their grandfather's 80th birthday banquet. And she is in a coma and the only survivor, and she's sifting through her memories to try and figure out why her sister did it. And it's set in a wealthy Chinese Indonesian family. And during the transition from the Suharto era to, I guess, the faux democratic era that we find her in now. Find ourselves in now. So
it's more of a political novel, a political commentary kind of a thing, or how is it?
There's a bit of politics in it. It's in the background. Reviews and critics have called it sort of, it's very evasive in terms of genre. So it seems like a thriller, but it's actually a family drama. But there's a lot of like political historical stuff. But there's a speculative bent as well, because there's, you know, like a sort of a fantastical business that the two sisters run. So it's a bit of a blend of all of those things, yeah.
When did you write this novel?
That one, it was published in Australia in 2018 under a different title, Under Your Wings, which I think was a very boring title, but we couldn't think of a better title. And then it was picked up for the US market, and the US co-agent came up with the idea of the title The Majesties, which is a quote, it's something in the book. And so that worked out really well because it's a better title. And that came out in 2020 in the US and UK.
What is the first book that you translated from Indonesian, and how you came across the book, and tell us about its publishing journey, how it got published?
So the first book was Perahu Kertas by D. Lestari. In English, that translates to Paper Boats. And so that was an Indonesian novel, and it was a bit of a kind of a lighthearted campus romance. And that, I think it came out in 2016, if I'm not mistaken. That was thanks to my agent, who asked me, and that's how I got into translating, because she asked me, are there any Indonesian writers that you like, and, you know, that maybe I could represent for the upcoming Frankfurt Book Fair, where Indonesia was the guest of honor. And if so, maybe, you know, we could work together. You can help me put together a proposal sample. And so I helped out with that. And Amazon Crossing, which is Amazon's translation imprint, picked it up. And so that was my first job, I guess, book length job.
So how was the reception like for the first translation?
I think it was pretty good. With Amazon published books, and it was the same way for my first novel, you don't get as much reception from traditional outlets unless you're with their literary imprint. So this was more of a commercial fiction book, less of a literary fiction book. And so, you know, the reviews were very good from readers. And it has a very good rating on Amazon. But, you know, it's been interesting to see the difference between, right, publishing with Amazon and publishing with a more traditional publisher who'll send it out to, the usual review outlets. But I can't complain. You know, it was a pretty good reception for the book. I was pretty happy with that.
When you translate a book, the feedback that you get, will there be any feedback other than using general adjectives like fluid prose, great translation and all? Will there be any specific feedback for your translations anytime?
For those, I would have to seek out people who know the Indonesian language.
Okay.
And then I get a bit more feedback there. But it is difficult. On its own, it will never come because they will not be in that position, you know, and I understand. Right. Because how can I also comment on the translation of another work? But I mean, I do appreciate the fact that I still do appreciate it when people call my translations fluid or enjoyable or seamless, because I do like to think then that at least that element of the translation is okay, you know. So it's funny because I think the more you know a language and the more, because I know a lot of Indonesianists, right, you know, who study Indonesia. And, you know, sometimes they'll be like, oh, yeah, but, you know, this didn't capture the exact meaning of this because it's quite specific, right? So then you'd be like, oh, well, how would you translate it? And then you look at, you know, some of them have produced translations and you look at the translations and you're like, it doesn't sound very good. So I think it's sometimes like you know, you have to lose one and gain in the other area. Yeah.
I think that's the most difficult part about translating is that, especially literary translations. How well are you equipped with the commercial side of translations, Tiffany?
I think I know a little bit, but it is one of those things where the more you know, the more you know, the less you know. So okay. I would say that the longer I do it, the more I think I know. And then all of us, you know, occasionally something will happen and I'll be like, oh, that is completely what I didn't expect. Or I'll find a clause in a contract and I'm like, oh, what is this clause doing here? I've never seen this kind of thing before. I work with my agent who represents my written and also a lot of my translated work, not all, but a lot of it. So she's actually based in Bangalore. And
what's her name?
Yeah. Jayapriya Vasudevan.
Yeah. Yeah. She's a publisher too, right?
No. So she used to be, back in the day, she used to run a bookstore back in the day. But now she just does agenting. She doesn't do publishing. So there's also a publisher called Jacaranda, but unrelated and in the UK. So that's a different... We've been working quite closely with a lot of things. And so it's been a lot, you know, like, so I learned some things from her as well. As well as, you know, when I get my own contracts or, you know, when translators get together, they often will exchange news a bit. So then you'll get to know what's, you know, what deals people are making or what, you know, contract terms they had versus yours and which editor is nice to work with and which isn't and all of that kind of thing. Yeah. All the gossip kind of.
But that's one of the major parts for professional translators, I guess, the commercial side of it. You get to spend a lot of time on that.
I think you do, because you have to prepare. Because even with my agent, I have to prepare the pitch. I have to help with the pitch. I have to do the sample, the synopsis, because, you know, she doesn't have access to the original material, right? Whereas I do. And even if she's working with the author's publisher who may hold the rights for English language translations, then in that case, I'm often there to double check, to clean things up a little bit, if, you know, to make sure that it really looks very nice, I hope, for the any publisher who's considering. So yeah, so in a way you're acting kind of like a little agent yourself. And then also, you know, you have to think about the author side as well. I mean, depending on what the arrangement is, it depends if the publisher is the one who holds the rights or if the author holds the rights. And if the author holds the rights, then you do have to work quite closely with them. If not, you may work through an intermediary like the publisher, but contact the author on the translation process itself if you have any questions that need clarifying.
Well, for our listeners, please talk about contemporary Indonesian literature and translations into English and any recommended books to read.
So I really like the writer Intan Paramedita. So she wrote, in English it's called The Wandering, and it's really cool. It's a sort of gothy contemporary choose your own adventure novel, and it's really a meditation on migration, global nomadism, but how class, how gender, how education status, you know, economics, all of those affect how people move through the global landscape. So I think that's a very clever one. And I hopefully there's going to be another English translation of her latest book coming out as well. But I won't talk about that, because I'll just talk about ones that people can read immediately. And another one that she wrote, is the English title is Apple and Knife, and that's a short story collection. And both of those were translated by Stephen J. Epstein. So those are both very good. I would highly recommend both of those. Another one I would recommend, you know, just because it's quite recent, 24 Hours with Gaspar, I think by, and the translation was Laura Norgaard, and that's by Sabda Armandio, and it's, I think that's a quite tricky
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that's a quite an interesting one. I really loved it. It's a beautiful book. Coming to your works, what are you currently working on, Tiffany?
So I just finished a novel manuscript for my my own written work, and I'm currently working on translating two novels. So one is a very short, almost a novella thriller, and that's actually for an Indonesian publisher. So that's interesting. The English edition will be released in Indonesia, and they had said it's because they want readers to read, who do read English, to be able to, I guess, either improve their English language skills or compare the Indonesian and English edition. So that's quite interesting. And it does speak actually to how English is moving through the world, right? There's sort of a colonization, that's a linguistic colonization that is happening, right? Yeah, so a lot of Indonesians, you know, middle class and above, or who like to read, are also like quite fluent and consuming a lot of English language literature and translations as well. So that's been very interesting. And that one's really cool because it's a thriller. And I think the inspiration is from a very particular type of Japanese thriller genre. I forget what's particular about it, but it opens with a report about the murder, a mass murder of a family. And of course, you know, because The Majesties, my novel, opened with the mass murder of a family. So I was like, oh, this is very exciting. It's like a match made in heaven, you know.
okay.
Yeah. So that one is called Pasien, or Patient, and it's by Naomi Midori, who's actually an Indonesian author who's, I think, currently living in Guangzhou in China. So that's quite international as well. And then the next one I'm working on is also another book by Budi Dharma, who wrote People from Bloomington. And that one's called Olenka. And it's quite different in flavor, but it's a bit more slow, a bit more meditative. Stylistically, it was very famous for breaking ground in Indonesia because it did a lot of things that one could describe as sort of collage-like. So the narrative itself is of one piece, but in it are interspersed news reports, events. The original had actually a lot of photos and news clippings, you know, and there were a lot of like very long footnotes, and there's a lot of allusions and external references. So it's a very interesting novel in terms of that. So I'm very excited to be bringing that. Pasien, or Patient, will be coming out this year. For Olenka, that's harder to gauge because that might be 1 or 2 years from the delivery date. I think my translation is due at the end of this year, beginning of next year. So it will probably be 1.5 to 2 years after that because, you know, the publishing schedule. So they like to have a lot of lead time for marketing and publicity and all of that.
Now we'll talk about two books that you translated, which has got a lot of recognition. One is by Norman Erickson Passeribu, that is The Happy Stories Mostly.
Yeah, so it's a short story collection focusing on the queer experience in Indonesia. Norman is a queer writer. You know, they've described in interviews that it was a book written for Indonesian queers in mind. So I think it's very uncompromising in that. And it's this blend of absurdism and a bit of sci-fi as well. And, you know, like just all of the stories are quite different in each of their own ways. And, you know, there's a sort of dark humor that runs through all of their work. So, of course, there are, I think almost all are about Batak characters because Norman is ethnic Batak, which is a ethnic group in Indonesia, an indigenous ethnic group in Indonesia. So, yeah, so I really enjoyed translating it. It was a big challenge because stylistically there are some similarities, but I really had to quite, you know, one has to change quite a lot with each story because Norman would alter, you know, the perspective alters quite a lot and the subject matter. And I felt like they're always keeping the reader on their toes.
And even there are some phrases, I think Batak phrases.
Also, you know, for the Indonesian reader, who is would be majority is Javanese, right? It would be like for them, they would also not know the words necessarily, right? So you want to keep the Batak flavor strong and uncompromising, and also create the same effect, right, for a reader in Indonesia. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a wonderful collection of stories.
Yeah, I'm glad you liked it.
The other one is, of course, which won the Penn Translation Prize, People from Bloomington. You are also translating the other book from him. Tell us about the author. Take us through People from Bloomington too.
So Budi Dharma is actually quite an established literary figure. And he was actually already quite well known when he wrote the short story collection. I don't know how it was in India, but in Indonesia, actually, until fairly recently, until I'd say the past maybe 1-2 decades, maybe 3 now, because I'm getting older. You know, short stories used to be like a very, it was perfectly normal to just write short stories. They would be published in newspapers and in magazines, and everyone would read those newspapers and magazines. And, you know, like, so it was interesting because whenever I have had podcast interviews with about Budi Dharma, and there have been people who get it wrong, and they kind of say like, oh, well, after People from Bloomington, which was a short story collection, he then published a novel, which then got him famous. And I was like, no, you know, I said, no, you're just imagining that, because he was actually already very famous before even the book was published of his short stories and before the novel. So, so he was very well known for his short stories already. And this was around the 70s, 1970s. And he was also an academic. So he was a university academic as well. So at some point, he went to the States, specifically to Bloomington, Indiana, the University of Indiana University, there to study English literature and get his master's and his PhD. And it was while he was there that he decided to write People from Bloomington, which is in fact about people from Bloomington. I remember reading it or hearing about it for the first time, and I was thinking like, oh, that's so interesting. That's just something that you would not think of an Indonesian writer as writing, because you think, you know, it'd be set in Indonesia. And he has written a lot of other things set in Indonesia, but People from Bloomington. And it's funny too, because even now, I was at a book launch recently, and then they mentioned People from Bloomington. It came up, and they said like, yeah, well, I was just so interested you called it People from, you translated it as People from Bloomington, because it's actually about migrants in Bloomington or Indonesian. It was a Zoom launch, so I didn't get a chance to reply. But I really wanted to say like, no, it's not. It's actually about people from Bloomington, like except for one. I think Budi Dharma told me himself, because I was quite active in corresponding with him on the translation. And it says so in the foreword, I think. Except for the first two stories, the rest are about people from Bloomington. So they're meant to be, I guess, you know, white Americans in Bloomington. You know, or I guess their ethnicity is never stated. But, you know, like they're supposed to be, as you said, natives,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I just think that's like, kind of cool, because it reverses the usual, you know, the other way, right? So we have Rudyard Kipling writing about, you know, like people like, you know, in like the colonies, you know, like and pretending, you know, taking on the native voice. I think Joseph Conrad does it as well with his Malay fiction, if I recall. And, you know, this, and I was thinking, and I remember reading this book and being really excited and thinking like, This wasn't just the only merit of the book, of course, right? It's such a creepy, darkly humorous book. It's like Curb Your Enthusiasm kind of funny, but then also like there's some other, you know, dark elements as well, plus like some ennui, plus like this really, you know, the really absurd situations the characters get in. But I remember thinking like, this is really cool because if we find a publisher for this, then at least people will say like, oh, okay, see, it's not just like white people writing about brown and yellow people, right? Brown and yellow people can also write about, you know, these white people too. it actually exists going the other way as well. Yeah.
You talked about, you know, your choice of books, writing about murders, creepy experiences and all. Do you have any creepy experience with ghosts or something to narrate?
I do have dark thoughts. I think I've always had a very morbid streak. So, you know, even when I was younger, I think I always had sort of a, just darkly humorous thoughts, macabre thoughts. I think I've always been inclined that way. When I was in graduate school, I used to work at this natural history store and all the other employees were goths. So that will tell you something. And, you know, they were doing a lot of animal taxidermy and we used to sell human skulls. So we would get the, at the time, the owner would order the human skulls on eBay. He would bid for them on eBay. But most of them came from this guy, from two guys. One was named Gao and another guy was named Kevin in China. And we would get these giant shipments of human skulls. And because I was the newest employee, my job, aside from feeding, cleaning the mouse cages, feeding the snakes, I had to clean all the human skulls. And, you know, like, I remember actually, it was funny. There was this Chinese guy who came in, a delivery guy. And I think he thought I spoke Chinese. And I don't. My Chinese is very bad. But he asked me in Chinese, he said, "Are you afraid to work here?" And I had never occurred to me to be afraid. I was like, oh, no, it's okay. It's not so bad here. It was certainly interesting. But yeah, I remember those human skulls, they would be like larval cases because, you know, larvae had they'd been buried somewhere for a long time. I have no idea where. And then sometimes you'd have to pick out bits of gum from the top here. You'd have to pick it off and it would be really rubbery from age. But yeah, it never occurred to me to be scared of that kind of thing.
It never occurred to you to write about it?
Yeah, no, actually it did influence a bit The Majesties, my novel. So the bugs in it, there's a little bit of influence. But I am conscious of not treading on that because actually the partner of the boss, who's also the manager, she was at the time writing a screenplay based on the store. So I remember, it's always in my mind, like, okay, that's her material. I can't take her material. She has to write about, it's her right to write about that.
To end the conversation, please read a paragraph from the story.
So this is from the second story in the collection. And it's the opening paragraph to the short story, Joshua Karabish. I received a letter from his mother stating that he was dead. When and where Joshua had died, it didn't mention, and the letter itself came by regular mail, not express courier. It did, however, contain a request. If I had the time or money to spare, would I be willing to pack up his belongings and send them to her by third-class economy mail? If I didn't have the money, continued Joshua's mother, would I be so kind as to donate the items to Opportunity House, a charity that helped people in need? And if Opportunity House was too far away and I didn't have the time, means, or funds to bring the items over, then I should just head to the closest garbage dump and dispose of Joshua's belongings there. In short, wrote Joshua's mother, I should get rid of his things as quickly as possible in order to avoid inconveniencing either myself or the owner of the house in which I rented a room.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Tiffany, for such a lovely, enjoyable, humorous conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.